Baby Friday. And it's the Fan Morning Show. I'm JD Bungus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. Ailish, you didn't seem to give... I didn't get the reaction that I thought I was going to from saying it's Baby Friday.
Well, it was so loud that it cracked into my headphones.
That's what it was.
You have to be more... You know, you have to be more baby with it. Baby Friday. Yours was more like, it's Friday.
It is. Well,
JD, you gotta swaddle Baby Friday.
You have to swaddle
Baby
Friday.
You can't be
that
rough with it.
I am always rough with Baby Friday, okay? Baby Friday is not meant to be coddled and swaddled.
Especially a Baby Friday after No Sports Wednesday.
That's true.
How'd you do on No Sports Wednesday? What'd you do last night?
I made a nice dinner.
Yeah.
For myself.
Nice.
I had a nice
it was like I ate food. Oh, you ate food? Wow. Oh, that's a very interesting.
I watched Euphoria.
Oh, yeah. I haven't gone around to the second season.
Oh, it's good. It's real good. And I had an early bedtime. It was very nice. Well, self-care night.
Yeah, that's really nice. I got to bed fairly early last night, too. Blake, you?
I had to write, and then I had to do TV, and then I got into the beers. Yeah.
Okay.
But I got into the beers, but yeah, just much later than I, although I say that much later than I would have otherwise. No, that's not true. I wouldn't have been getting into the beers at like 11 a.m. So,
yeah, sure.
I got into the beers at the normal time I would get into the beers, but.
I went to see Nightmare Alley with Bradley Cooper. It was really good.
I haven't even heard of this.
It was really good.
Is that the Guillermo del Toro one?
Yes, it is. And so I hated Shape of Water. I loved Pan's Labyrinth. So he's got two movies, and I know he made Hellboy, but whatever. I'm not a really big comic book movie guy. It doesn't.
Also,
really
you can't take Hellboy like seriously in this.
Yeah,
like,
it's very different.
I think.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a lot of comic book movies, but like among the ones I've seen, it's like cool for a comic book movie. But I don't think anyone's like, well, here's his
highest
Oscar list.
Work. Yes. So, I was such a non-fan of Shape of Water that I had a lot of reservations about going to see this movie. It was phenomenal. Bradley Cooper entered a totally different echelon of respect level for me, and I already respected that guy. But it's incredible. Great noir film, really, really high quality, really beautiful theater movie. Like something where there's some shots in it, not to sound like a douche here, but it was just beautiful. It was a beautiful movie. There were some shots in it where you just sat there and went, whoa, this is cool. I felt, you know, if it's so pretty that you feel naturally high, that's a good feeling when you go to the movie theater. So I think a lot of people think of stuff as, oh, you always want to go to the theater only for action movies, right? I hear this from friends all the time, like, I want to see Spider-Man or Dune or whatever in theaters. Sometimes the really pretty movies like that are the ones you actually need to see in theaters. So
is it up
thrilled,
for like awards yet, or do
yeah,
you
it's
think
up for Best
be?
Picture.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it's up for Best Picture.
It's got four nominations. Yeah,
yeah.
It's only got 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, and like it's got mid ratings, like 7.5.
You know what I love about that though? So one, I never look at Rotten Tomatoes before I go see a movie. Now I go in as dark as I possibly can, and with this one, this one had a weird preview that made me feel like it was something that it didn't end up actually being, which was really good for my experience of seeing it. But I would just recommend that to people in general when they go see movies is try to avoid... I get it because you're spending a night out, right? So you want to make the investment of spending a night out, going out, paying the money, making sure that it's worth it. But I really believe that just the experience of going in dark makes it more worth it than trying to decide which one of these things you're going to look out for.
I did that with Dune, and I was like, whoa, this is crazy. Like, I just went in, bought a ticket for Dune, and I was like, I don't really know what this is about. It's probably about dunes. I don't know, like about sand.
It's probably about dunes.
Yeah, I'm like, is it about maps? You know, I love maps. Yeah. Show me a map of where the sand dunes are. And I thought it had it definitely surprised me.
It reminded me, though, Ailish, that you don't put chocolate in your popcorn, which I did again last night. I ate a whole large popcorn.
I was about to ask what you did with the popcorn situation.
Yeah, M&M's, large popcorn, large Coke. It's the only time I drink soda. It's the only time I ever drink it.
I feel the same way. There's something special about a little movie theater soda. The ice is good.
It is. It's just the fountain pop at a movie theater is worth it. Although it is highway robbery. You end up.
How much did you pay for that? $28?
$34.
Oh my God.
Correct. Yeah, $34. They made that That's fountain gross. Pop cost them like 10 cents. Here's the thing though. Not I actually even. It was one of the first times where I paid it and didn't even bat an eye because I was just so happy to be in a movie theater. I was so happy that they still exist. And one of my local theater closed during the pandemic. It was probably going to close anyway because it got turned into condos like everything else here. Oh. But I do still love to go see a movie. And we're way more of a TV culture now, I find. Everybody connects more through television shows than they do with movies. But yesterday was just a good reminder of, oh, right, it can be great to go to the theater, see a really quality movie, have something to talk about with a friend. It was just, I actually had the perfect movie going experience night, and I felt a little appreciative about doing
Except
it.
Except so, yeah, for the M&Ms.
No, the M&Ms were phenomenal. They just didn't have glossettes, so I couldn't throw the glossettes in there. I had to settle for peanut M&Ms, which is fine. It was just not the same.
I love a peanut M&M. I also get a kick out of the fact that glossettes, like the entire thing is like they've been stale the entire time they've existed.
Yeah. But they melt. But it's they good. Melt in the popcorn. That's the
it
thing.
It's a perfect movie theater snack.
Yeah, it is. It's just like they're trash on their own. I would never. If you came up to me in the streets and you said, here's a free box of glossettes, I would say, where the bleep is the melted hot popcorn with this, you animal? Like, what are you trying to do? And I would throw it back at them in anger. So,
yeah.
We also used last night to solicit some thoughts on the Raptors. Today, we're going to do the Blake bag. We're going to take in some of the questions from...
Still don't love that name.
I love the name. I think it's the best thing that we've ever done on the entire show is have a segment called Blake's Bag where we reach deep inside and we go pick out whatever you need. We reach into the bag and we grab it and we do it. Blake's Bag. Questions that listeners have about the Raptors as they start their second half tomorrow, I believe, right? NBA season's back tonight. We're going to talk about our favorite stories slash teams later in the show today. Do we have? No, we don't. We've decided that we're going to do Friday with a little bit more NBA. But can I just share one thought I had this morning when I woke up about the NBA as it returns?
Go.
Pretty sure the Lakers passed on DeMar DeRozan so that they could not only, like, they traded for Russell Westbrook. I'm pretty sure that happened. That DeMar wanted to be a Laker and they decided that they were going to pass, and they were more interested in bringing in Westbrook. And so the Chicago Bulls season, well, it's just incredible that the Bulls season is now being built on, and I know Caruso's hurt right now, but one of the big reasons for their success is that they ended up getting Caruso and they ended up getting DeRozan, two players that they could have really used in a sign-and-trade. And I think there's an irony from a Raptors standpoint anyways that LeBron's championship window might end up being closed by DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, it's the an irony interesting. Of it all. Yeah, it's an interesting twist on it.
Yeah, maybe because I'm like, in the movie mode. I'm yeah, about twist you're endings.
Of, you're
twist
writing
endings.
Your own
oh, it was DeRozan. Life. It was DeRozan. He did it. He closed the window. He walked away. He did the Virgil Kent. He started walking away from LeBron's career. Straightened out his leg and then got in a car. I like it.
DeMar. Yeah, I mean, I would think that all contracts the same. He would have preferred to play in L.A. I know that has meant a lot to him or would mean a lot to him. But yeah, you wanted Russ. And I get it. The idea was, hey, LeBron can't carry the load for 82 games. He needs someone who can. You know who else could carry? Like, you know whose whole thing is carrying the load for 82 games and then needing to cede the playoffs to someone like LeBron? DeMar DeRozan. DeMar DeRozan.
Sorry, that was,
also sure. Apparently, I need to cede the Blake bag to LeBron. I don't understand where you're going with that one, but... yes, that's DeMar's whole thing. It would have been a good fit.
So let's do it then. Let's get into some of the essentially listener mail. You can also reach Blake just now if you want to hit him up. Text in 590-590. We'll keep this monitoring. We'll try to maybe check in on some of these throughout the show if we run out of time here. But loaded show today. We've got Jeff Merrick. We've got Natalie Spooner. Ever heard of her winning a gold medal? Andrew Raycroft. And James Myrtle. But first, let's go. What was your favorite? Actually, I won't do favorite. Let's just go. Let's just start. Let's start with the Blake bag. What was the first question?
All right. I'll read you some. Evan Osborne on Twitter. Do you agree that it would be beneficial for the Raptors to sign a legitimate big man just to eat some minutes? I'm sure there's nothing special out there, but they're just going to need a decent rim protector to give themselves a chance against teams around them.
So in theory, yeah, sure, absolutely, you want another big. I think with that open roster spot they have and with that cap flexibility they have now after the trade, you want either a point guard or a center. Like, if they signed another forward, I will lose my mind. But yes, they're like that. That would be ideal. But also the type of guy you're getting in the buyout market is like, I do feel like it gets a little overstated in recent years because of the news cycle around buyouts. Like, most often you're getting guys like, do you remember the year, JD, they got Jason Thompson? And everyone's like, oh, they might get a buyout guy. They might get a buyout guy. And then it's like, oh, yeah, you got the guy with the longest playoff drought in the NBA who's just a guy and never played in the NBA again.
Blake, so confirm or deny, though, with Jason Thompson, the practice reports when he first arrived of people's exuberance about his ability to shoot at open gym when he first became a Toronto Raptor were things of legend in the city. Jason Thompson whispers were large for like a 2-day cycle of, you should see this guy in the gym. He's knocking down everything.
I can't confirm that because
were you
I
a part of that?
No. I was very disappointed that. So I really wanted them to call up Ronald Roberts from that was the first year of the 905, and I wanted him.
Well, you
him,
were
and then,
right.
Like,
you were history was on your side with Ronald
right around
Roberts.
The time they waived Anthony Bennett, Roberts started having like degenerative knee issues that basically killed his career. A whole like, hey, my knees hurt for years, and we don't know why, and nothing can determine it. Anyway, so even if you look at the centers who could potentially hit the buyout market. Mm-hmm. Short of Robin Lopez, who I think would actually be a decent fit and like is like a plug-and-play kind of guy and Orlando might shake him free, they're like the type of centers who could become available are the type of quote-unquote centers the Raptors already have, like Derek Favors. Like, you really need another undersized center. Mike Muscala, who is a little bulkier but like is probably playing the outside more so than anything. So I don't think there's a natural guy there. I do think Robin Lopez would be decent. You do run into a little bit of, you know, I saw people joke the other day about the Leafs, like, hey, maybe the solution to your problems is not getting guys from the Coyotes. I don't know that the solution to your center problems should be getting the Orlando Magic's buyout guy every year. Maybe that's a bit of an issue. But yeah, there's just like the skills that you would want someone to bring to that position are skills that like you're just not getting bought out.
Yeah.
Probably. So Robin Lopez would be the one guy I'd keep in mind. There's like there have been rumors Gorgui Dieng could shake free again, but also like we've done the will Gorgui Dieng be a Raptors bio target like 100 years in a row now.
Yeah. So if you can get Lopez or Dieng for free, then sure. I that's one of those things where it's basically the minor league contract in baseball where you say well, there's no such thing. Right. There's no bad thing. There's no such thing as a bad minor league deal, or there's no such thing as a bad buyout market where you just end up adding a center for no cost at all with no commitment at all. What this makes me think of, though, consistently is I don't like always looking backwards and just kind of hammering past mistakes with teams, but the Raptors did get Kem Birch this way. This is how they acquired Kem Birch in a buyout market. And then instead of treating him like a buyout candidate, they ended up giving him a 3-year contract. And it's not the worst contract in the world. Of course not. It's something that Blake and I have discussed in private is movable, right? But when you just said a center with degenerative knee problems from the 905, I kind of think that Kem Birch, no offense, seems like a good guy, Canadian, has a useful NBA skill set, but is closer to a degenerative knee 905 big man, then I think he is someone deserving of a 3-year contract with a developing team. So, especially once they got Precious Achiuwa, and I don't know how much they thought that those two guys could end up actually working together, but the way that this team was constructed, having both of those guys and Chris Boucher going into the season, it's still just a point of curiosity to me exactly how the front office arrived at the decision to pay Kem, given they already had those two pieces in place once they gave him that contract.
the way they talk about Kem, you'd think he is that 7-footer that's a matchup
right.
change. Like it's, hey, maybe against Jokic and JV, we need to start differently. It's like, okay, well, he's the same size as Siakam and Barnes. Like, he's jacked, don't get me wrong. He hasn't missed an arm day in a while, but also, like, he's 6'9".
Guys shoot over top of him, and when they get the ball in the low block against Kem Birch, they're thinking mouse in the house. They're not thinking, wow, this guy's so jacked, how are we going to get around him?
Yeah, and, like, if we're talking just, like, raw overall size, like, yes, again, the glamour muscles are there. I think OG and Thad are both bigger than him. Like, I don't know. NBA teams are really bad for not updating the heights and weights of guys on the roster thing. But I would imagine OG and Thad are, like, right around the same size. And, like, Scotty wouldn't be there weight-wise because his lower half's still so small. But, like, you look at his, like, Dwight Howard shoulders. I don't know that Kem is, like, that level. And, like, Kem's a poor defensive rebounder. Mm-hmm. For a center. So,
yes.
I like Kem Birch. I think he brings a lot culture-wise, and I get what they were doing. Like, they like him, and you can't really foresee the knee stuff coming. But, yeah, he's not the answer to Evan's question. He's not the answer there. And, yeah, you would like them to address it, but I don't know who's going to shake free. Like, it's not the type of guys available on the buyout market are Jason Thompson.
Yeah, I guess my point is just more that I understand the construction of the team where they've decided to go with many athletic 6'9"-ish wings with long wingspans who can defend multiple positions. And they've said, you know what? The odd time we're going to run into a really dominant low post center or someone that can get to the rim, we'll deal with that. You know, we'll send multiple defenders at them. We'll defend as a team, and we'll try to take advantage of that on the other end with our athleticism, whatever. I just don't see Kem fitting that profile. And once they acquired Precious Achiuwa, since they got Kem Birch as a buyout candidate, if he really was a threat to leave on a 3-year contract, I'm sorry, but I really think the more prudent move would have been to say, hey, we believe in your talent. Thank you for joining us, but we didn't give up anything to get you, so tip the cap, goodbye. We need to be able to go out and address this position with someone Blake just outlined, where they say, yes, defensive rebounding is an actual skill set because we need a defensive rebounder on this team. Someone who protects the rim a little bit better. We need someone like that on this team. I just don't think Kem actually fits the mold of any of this, other than the culture stuff. But again, Blake, that's not something that I'm giving a 3-year contract to.
No, you don't pay for culture is the thing, right?
No.
You're supposed to build the culture so that you can either get guys less expensively or, you know, take flyers on guys who maybe otherwise wouldn't fit. Mm. So to circle back to Evan's question, just to close it out, Evan, I think that this is obviously a need, but it is a off-season addressing question. Like, if you get someone on the buyout market, they're slotting in and fighting Thad and Precious and Boucher for the bench minutes that there already aren't enough to go around. It's a bigger off-season question for the front office of, hey, do we want to keep extending this? Like, we're the first team in, at, like, as far back as I could go in the Sportradar database of not having a 6'10" player or taller. Like, that's a bigger off-season question for the front office of what is the logical extension and ending point of this roster building strategy.
And also, if you get someone in a buyout market, please don't sign them to 3-year contracts because they have a good month with your team is all I'm saying. Like, that would be good.
You got a little bit of that mid-level exception left.
I know. That's all I'm asking. Ready to move on? What's next?
Yeah, so I can give you one about the Raptors front office or about a Thad Precious Kem question.
Dealer's choice. You're the mailman.
Okay. Let's do Raps front office. Welcome back, Blake. Is there a results metric that would change the Raps front office focus from primarily developmental to push for a conference final berth, or has that already been determined? Thanks. That's from Jay Rich.
So, Jay Rich, the unfortunate answer to this one is, like, the deadline's behind us, right? So if they were looking at all that stuff and it nudged them to push all in, they did not have a very good deadline. If they looked at all that stuff and they were like, well, let's, you know, powder dry, whatever, or just improve at the margins, then, yeah, their deadline was fine. I think that what they did suggests that they think they're kind of a marginal East team. We can look at some impact metrics and, hey, let's adjust for quality of competition and let's adjust for some luck factors and stuff like that. The Raptors still come out about 7th in the Eastern Conference by most of those. There's, like, a pretty clear delineation around 7 in the conference, depending on how much you want to give to the Brooklyn Nets of like, oh, obviously they're going to turn it around. Like, the Brooklyn Nets are hot garbage by most metrics, but it's like, oh yeah, Kevin Durant has been injured and they're about to get Ben Simmons back. Although, we'll talk about this in the Wake and Rake. I opened up the injury report for tonight, this morning. Everyone in the league is still injured. I thought everyone was coming back after the All-Star break. There are no players playing tonight.
Come on, they had like 12 days off.
I know. So, yeah, there are some indicators, and they have a very smart and forward-thinking analytics staff who work closely with the GM and the president mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But, no, this season was about how do those five guys fit and what is the ceiling of that group. Again, this is more of a like big picture offseason question, but I think that their deadline move suggests that they see this group right now as a second tier team in the Eastern Conference, which I think is fair. Now the question is what do you do this summer to get them to take that step?
What I think is most interesting about the framework that you just presented is something that we've kind of discussed around and picked at, but not something that we've said directly, which is, if this season was about finding out what these five guys are together, then to me anyways, we've started to accomplish that. And they seemingly have a pretty good understanding of it with assessing them as a mid-tier Eastern Conference team, the way that Blake just said it, right? If that's what you are at the end of this year, how do you approach taking that next step? You've traded down in the draft, and you're not going to be in the draft lottery for the seemingly the next 2 years, right? Which is where you can get high-end talent that could supplement this roster. You're going to ask that Scottie Barnes develops more, that he continues to take on a greater role with this team, right? You didn't draft him fourth overall to continue to be this guy. He's only 20 years old. Of course, he can have leaps and bounds. But I wouldn't anticipate Scottie Barnes even showing up next year with all of a sudden just a completely new offensive package and taking this team to a completely different height. And I think that the other core three players are closer to their primes and peaks than they are far away from them. Would you not agree? Like, even with OG Anunoby, I think that we're starting to learn that, hey, this is pretty damn well near what OG is going to be as a player. So what does that tell you if that's kind of what you settled on throughout the season? Do you want to use another year trying to kind of determine what that group can do with just another developmental year of Scotty? Like, it's kind of strange that we went into this hoping that we would find out more about the Raptors. We found out that they're better than they are, but that the better than they are actually also might have a pretty hard-capped ceiling that might require a fairly aggressive move. Like, I'm very interested to see what exactly the next step is going to be for this roster, because I just actually think that despite all of this research that's been done, there still remains to be seen. Like, you could still pitch me a variety of different approaches, and I don't think that I would shut down any one of them.
You're right that a lot of these guys, and the way I like to describe where a guy is developmentally is like, I talk a lot about phases, right? So you're in your development phase, you're in your, like, there's a phase where you're just kind of getting your feet, there's a phase where you're determining what your peak could be, and then you enter a peak phase. And I think Fred and Pascal are kind of in the early part of their peak phase. You kind of look at 27 to 31 as, you know, it's not universal, but that's kind of the peak phase. And even
great,
OG,
I'm in my peak phase, guys.
I don't, yeah. Oh, you're certainly in your peak phase. I'm certainly past my prime. There's absolutely no question about it.
Go me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing about that trade, JD.
Yeah.
The Dragic Thad Young trade is you are now older than anyone on the Raptors.
God, that hurts. I hate it. Yeah.
So it even really a guy stinks. Like OG, though, like yes, OG is still young by real years and even by NBA years. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, though, we have to look at this is his fifth full season in the NBA. And developmentally, that's a little different. And I think that probably means, like, it's the Stanley Johnson thing where, like, okay, mm-hmm. Stanley Johnson's somehow still only 19, but he's played like 30 years in the NBA. I don't really understand how that works, but every fan base still talks themselves into, well, Stanley Johnson could be a guy. He's still only 25. So I think OG is like closer to that. Hey, he's entering his peak phase than you might otherwise think for a 25-year-old. So I agree with you there. The big swing factor, in addition to what they can accomplish this offseason, which again, I don't, the one hang up I have with the Dragic Thad Young swap is you don't have that contract anymore to make that stuff work. And like, sure, you could sign and trade Thad Young, but it's not, you didn't do the contract rollover thing.
I agree. I still don't like the Thad Young trade, and I know that they could end up signing him, and he could be a productive player for them. And I am very curious to see what his role is in the second half. I don't know if we have a mailbag question about him, but we saw a little glimpse of it in the Raptors' final game, where that you saw a couple of quick things from Thad where you went, "Oh, that's really nice. His ability to get to the rim is really nice. His ability to defend is really nice. He's a competent NBA player." I just still don't think that the priority should have been trying to find someone who could give you 24 minutes a night over get someone who can roll that contract over and provide you with the ability to be flexible in terms of what you were going to trade the following season, especially when it did cost you draft capital.
So that's swing factor one. And then swing factor two is, what do they think Scotty Barnes' timeline is like to become the second or third best player on this team? And if they think that timeline is quicker and more robust than we do, maybe, like, obviously we're all extremely fond of Scotty Barnes and blown away by the rookie season he's had. I had a piece go up at .ca yesterday, and one of the kind of storylines to watch in the second half is, hey, this is going to be a really cool rookie of the year race, an all rookie race. Mm-hmm. And he's right in the mix there. But if you think he's going to be like, does this core require, for this core to be a threat, does it require Scotty Barnes to like usurp Pascal and Fred as the best player on the team? Do you think you can get there if he just jumps OG and Gary as the third best player on the team? Like, that's a tough question that they feel a certain way. And like, look, long term, I could see it for sure. Scotty Barnes could be the best player on this team if you give it an open timeline. But to your point, there's a contrast a little bit of Fred Pascal and OG are there, right? Like, they're ready to go. You could drop a star player into this right now, and the Raptors would be deadly because suddenly Pascal's a two, Fred's a three, OG's a four, and so on down the chain. So the big question for that front office is, how quickly can Scotty Barnes get there? And I think that they're really...
I don't think
really
it's a one-year project. I don't think it's a one-year thing.
I don't think so either. I think that maybe they think, hey, one more full year in their developmental system and their offseason program and stuff like that. And I think they maybe think he could be the third best player next year. And then maybe you're looking at the additions on the fringes don't have to be as huge, other than like getting a capable backup point guard and a real center at some point.
I just don't see that. I just don't see a team that could have Scotty Barnes in a one-year development going up to be the third player on this team, right? Let's just play this out a little bit. So let's say that Pascal and Fred maintain this exact level where both those guys are all-stars, and that Siakam is sneakily like a third all NBA team candidate, which
yeah,
I really
they're somewhere in
is.
The like 12 mm-hmm. to 25 range in terms of best players in the league.
Yes. I don't see them going in and beating a Sixers team that has a healthy Embiid and a healthy Harden if Scotty Barnes takes that step to being the third best player in that group. I don't see them going in and beating a Brooklyn team that has a healthy Kevin Durant. Again, if you want to predicate this on, well, all these guys are injury prone and you could end up doing this, sure, but I don't really view that as a vision or a plan. That's
you know,
like,
who's not injury prone not. Also? The extremely young and cool Cleveland Cavaliers, who have boatloads of cap space and the only rookie who's been demonstrably better than your rookie so far this year.
Right. And so I would say that you're kind of losing on both ends of this, where you're saying, well, you're not good enough to beat the best teams, but you also don't have as many core developmental pieces like a Garland, Mobley, Allen combination that could end up actually improving internally or being built around as easily. It's just they're sort of in a trickier spot than I think we realize. It can both be a it's not a negative, but it's just this season has been a lot of positives. But all of those positives still kind of lead me down the path of, hey, this is as good as it could have possibly been with these guys this year. So what now? What comes next? Because I think if you try to fool yourself into thinking that you're a center away, right? Like, the ideal center candidate for this team, really, for most people, was Jonas Valanciunas, who obviously you're not getting anymore based on the way the Pelicans are going. But you're not a Jonas Valanciunas.
Maybe Zion's the center you're getting now.
Right, sure. Yeah. If you get Zion, that's different. But I'm saying that there's nothing to my eye that you can do with this team short of moving off one of those pieces. And the problem with moving off of those pieces is it might take away what makes you special, which is that you're the team with the three stretchy 6'9 guys. So I just
– And then Gary Trent becomes the question then, right? Like, this Gary Trent's $18 million, and even though, yes, it's he can opt out and stuff like that, like, Gary Trent is exactly the type of player archetype that teams will overpay for. or find attractive in a star swap or whatever. If, like, I'm not saying this because I'm just using it as an example, but your guy Bradley Beal, like, if that gets revisited in the offseason or something like that, you know, maybe that's a piece.
The problem is, we'll move on. The problem is that it's just like, how much is Gary Trent Jr.'s last year of his contract going to be worth next year if they decide to move him, or even during this offseason? It's just, it's a really hard thing to project.
We've talked about since they signed it, right? Like, you're basically, he's an expiring contract now.
Yeah, he is, which is brutal. Let's get to the next question.
No, okay, so Rob Centra. No disrespect to a guy I love, but is DeMar DeRozan a candidate for most improved player? He has made one of the most difficult jumps this year from very good player to deserving consideration from bottom of the MVP ballot. For bottom of the MVP ballot.
So first, hello, Rob. Thanks for listening and sending the question. Rob's a good guy, big supporter of the show. I think the stuff you're talking about, DeMar's growth as a closer, DeMar's getting back to the, hey, you're one of the deadliest scorers in the league, is huge. He's having yet another, like, he's averaging a career high in scoring right now, which is kind of crazy to think about given just how big a scoring load he carried for the Raptors those years. The issue is that if we're being, like, practically, the Most Improved Player Award is a stats jump award.
Yeah.
And that's more or less all it is. And his assists are down, and his points are up 6.5 points per game. But, like, his efficiency is more or less where it's been the last couple years. Again, assist rate's down. The ancillary stats haven't really moved a lot. The big case you could make for DeMar is if you are a voter that looks at some of the advanced impact metrics, like, DeMar is – those metrics are finally agreeing that DeMar is DeMar. And for a long time they lagged, whether it's because of his defense or the Kyle Lowry impact or San Antonio being bad or whatever. But this is finally the year where they're like, no. DeMar being able to soak up 28 points a game really efficiently helps your team. It's like, shocker. It took the metrics 13 years to figure it out. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's a cool, like, nod of, like, yes, DeMar has reached an absolute other level that we all were hoping he'd get to eventually. But realistically, the Most Improved Player Award is a stats jump award.
So let me first of all, I got to tell you, I love this question. Because I actually think that from a practical standpoint or an impact standpoint, a jump standpoint, this is the kind of intelligent question that I would say should be had amongst the voters of this award. Because what do we always say? Yeah, I don't know who Rob is, but you love him. That's very clear. He made what we call the most difficult leap in the sport, which is going from being a star to a superstar. That's what he's been every single night. I'm sorry, but superstars score 45-plus points and carry their teams to victories when they're riddled with injuries, and everyone is looking at the Bulls going, hey, I think the Bulls are kind of vulnerable right now. Like, Levine's in another lineup, and, you know, Vucevic came from an Orlando Magic team that won zero games, meaningful games, they won one meaningful game ever in the franchise's Vucevic history, and it had nothing to do with him because Marc Gasol put him in his pocket every single time they played. I'm just saying that this Bulls team has been without Caruso. They've been hurt, like, the entire year without Ball for long stretches. And DeRozan has been their consistent piece that's carried them. And so to make that leap of 6-plus points, that is a more valuable 6-point leap than some of the other players around the league. Like, I would guess that DeJounte Murray is going to be a candidate for this award. I don't think DeJounte Murray has jumped up by 6 points. And I also think, like, what's the value of Murray going from a good point guard to an all-star point guard on a team that wins no games? Why would we look at that as a bigger statistical leap than what's happening with DeRozan, even if it isn't one? That was the first name that came to mind.
No, it's a good one because he was an all-star this year, and, like, he's probably going to be in the mix for it. And you're right, he only jumped 4 points per game. He is, however, like, leading the league in steals and he's averaging four more assists a game too. But yeah, a lot of that is, like, DeMar's gone. So someone had to soak that up in San Antonio. I love DeJounte Murray. But yeah, the issue here is that I just went back as far as 2000. I'm not going to go further than this because it's not really necessary.
Sure.
But you go back as far as I went back to the Heydu Turkoglu one in 2007, 2008. Yeah. No one in their 30s has ever won most improved, at least in the recent history. So maybe we need a second version of most improved. But you're right. And Rob's right, where I use this in baseball all the time. And it's something that's hard to quantify, but – like the marginal value of wins, right? If you're the Toronto Blue Jays and you project as a 93 win team and you add a 2-win upgrade, that jump from 93 wins to 95 wins in terms of your playoff outlook and your playoff chances and stuff, that's way, way bigger than a jump from 75 wins to 77 wins. Not all wins are created
equal. Yes, yes.
And I think this is the argument with DeMar is like, yes, it's only 7 points a game or whatever it is, and his assists are down a little bit. Though all those things are not created equal. He is also doing that in a tougher environment on a significantly better team in a way that, like, yeah, they withstood the Zach LaVine injury and Caruso and Ball and DJJ and Patrick Williams because DeMar had literally a streak that beat Wilt Chamberlain's record for efficient 35-point game. So, yeah, it's intellectually, DeMar has a great case as most improved. He's just not going to win it.
So, first of all, I think that, Blake, you should have that over your desk like Homer Simpson does, and don't forget you're here forever, is I didn't go that far back because it was unnecessary, is your should be one of your credos. And secondarily, I think that's a really just astute point by this guy. I think DeRozan should be in it, but it gets back to what we talked about with the dunk contest yesterday, which is it's also not a cool award for DeRozan to win. It would be a tip of the cap for them to give it to him, but I think he would say, I would rather have down ballot MVP votes than most improved player votes. And
he would say, I've been this guy. Where have you been?
My brother won most improved player in high school football 1 year. And we were very proud of him. And he was sad. I said, why are you sad? He said, well, this means they think I sucked last year. And I think that's the way most people view that award. I think that's how DeRozan would view that award. Let's take a break. Let's come back, and let's do the A-List on a baby Friday. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD, Blake, and Ailish, Sports 5-9 of the Fan.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 of the Fan. It's a baby Friday edition. And it's a numerology edition.
I can't believe you didn't use this song. Again, we're breaking the rule of talking about the song again, but for you not to use this on Tutu Day is kind of on you.
I know.
You know? Like, what were you doing? You're asleep at the wheel.
I forget what I played. I think I played. No, God knows. But it should have been played 2 days ago, but it's being played today because of the first item on the A-List.
Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Ailish, I just realized something. You can always lie about what you played as a song because we can't put it on the podcast, so there's no record. So you could say, I actually did play it, you weren't paying attention, and I would have no recourse.
Yeah, I would never lie to the loyal listeners of the Fan Morning Show.
No, certainly not. Certainly not.
So, on Tuesday, I told you all about it being Tuesday, 2/2/22. It was a very special day. You guys weren't in full agreement with how special the day was.
I wasn't on the show.
Correct.
Yeah, Blake so much so that he didn't weigh in on it at all.
He took the day off.
He just said...
He's like, I can't handle the numerology anymore.
Our boss is like, hey, man, you should get a little bit of a breather before playoffs pick up and stuff. And I was like, okay, when? And he's like, well, you know what Tuesday is going to be. Ailish will not stop talking about numerology.
We don't want it to be controversial. JD already hates it, so we can't have double people ripping it down. So what do we got?
Number 22...
Yep.
Kevin Fiala. Okay. He's number 22 for the Minnesota Wild.
Future Leaf.
Maybe. He recorded 22 shifts in the second period. Period two. Fiala finished the period plus two. He had 22 minutes of ice time. Okay. He recorded his second point on shot 22 of the game, and apparently he even ate tuna as his pregame meal, and during one of the intermissions had to go number two.
Some of these things are unnecessary. this is actually fine. You know, that's an interesting one. I think Scorigami is lame. I always underplay your numerology. But when you sent me the actual screenshot of all the 222s that were there, like, it was pretty – it kind of reminded me of the Tebow 316 game. It really did, except much lower stakes and obviously not touched by God. Some form of, I don't know, weird, mischievous god, like a Luminati. Greek god was doing the 222 thing, whereas obviously it was Jesus Christ himself who touched Tim Tebow that day when he had the 316 day. And
no,
he
it was Stone
playoff.
Cold Steve Austin, yeah. Not Jesus
well,
Christ.
How, are we sure that they're that much different?
And he also had 2 points. Like, you just can continue to go through the stat sheet of what happened. Somebody in the comments even said he's from Switzerland. And if you look at Swiss, two S's at the end are like two twos. And
okay, well, that, see, that's
people
where
are getting
you lose
a little
me.
Bit
that's,
carried
that's,
away
that's where you
in
lose
the comments.
Me.
It was
you
funny.
You lose
but,
me before that, where it's like,
okay. Uh-huh.
Of course, like some of this stuff, it's like, I always think of when Kobe passed away, we had like months of every NBA person being like 8 this and 24 this. It's like, yeah, guess what? You're a low to medium event sport and everything counts in twos. 8 and 24 are going to come up fairly often. I like the shifts and the 2 points and the 20-second shot on net and stuff like that.
Number 22.
But when we're getting to tuna sandwiches and, oh, he had two nipples and stuff like that, then I'm like, okay, well, that's just like maybe, I don't know. That's where you start to lose me.
Okay, so a couple of those, though, very, very spooky numerology. A couple of them very silly. Agreed?
Agreed. Well, can I just say one thing? I pulled up his game log. Mm-hmm. He's only had 22 shifts one other time this year.
Yeah.
And he, like, I'm just saying. It,
Whoa, like, JD.
I there's no possibility, there's no way that the coaching staff looked at him and said, hey, Kevin's on 21 shifts, let's get him out there for 22.
One more.
He's number 22. No one was paying attention to that. But the thing that I do find interesting is that, of course, it's just coincidence, but I always wonder if that's a little bit of the mystic where it's, hey, it's 22 on the 22 day, and then he ends up getting for only the number two time this year his 22nd shift of the game. I don't know. Just I like to believe in that, all right? I choose to believe that there is some little weird form of mysticism and that it isn't completely – like, I prefer to live in a world where that little mysticism exists rather than in a world where it's a complete nothing, all right?
Or Dean Evason is, like, really buying into it, and he's like, we need to come back. We're down by a goal. Yeah. Who's up for their 22nd shift today? There's one other thing. That game lasted 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Oh, my God.
That was the
runtime.
Also, it was in Ottawa, so there were only two people in attendance.
Yeah. See, it would have been okay, though. It's like, yeah. All right, that's pretty good. So, yeah, numerology show. That's who we are. We're the
mystics. Here's another number. Here's another number.
I like how you said that. Here's another number, you nerd.
Sean Avery. Yeah. You know Sean Avery? He has signed a ECHL standard player contract with the Orlando Solar Bears. Mm-hmm. He has not played hockey for 10 years. He tried to get into acting. That was not a success. He's 42 years old.
Yeah.
42. There's a two in there. Well, he'll be 42. And yeah, he's really going to try to make a comeback, or is it a promotion for the network that he works for? I just thought it was
whatever
very,
he
very
does
strange.
Now, whatever he does now, it's a promotion for that. He's working. This is a work.
That's a lot of work to put in for a 10-year comeback.
Maybe he just wants that cool Solar Bears merch.
It is pretty cool, actually.
The Solar Bears, I think, have done something, a recent partnership with Spit and Chicklets. My guess is that this is some form of promotion for them as well. They seem to be pretty creative in terms of trying to advertise for themselves, and they do have a little bit of, I don't know, internet/hipster, hockey hipster cachet. My guess is that, yes, that's what this is directly involved in, is an ad campaign of some sorts for getting this guy. I have zero problem with it either, by the way. I cannot imagine the type of person who gets upset, even if he does play a game, and goes, you took away a spot from a guy who's trying to live the dream. Come on, just relax. It's the ACHL. If they do stuff like this, that's great. The fact that they get any attention on the game is fine. Sean Avery is, I would still say, one of the more interesting guys around hockey. Love him or hate him. Just there's you're fascinated to see what he'll say because he's not afraid to say anything at all. I also wish we were ever going to get a celebrity boxing match between he and my friend Matthew Barnaby, because Barney is desperate to do it. And
so he quote tweeted it.
I know.
And was like,
it's never going to happen.
Sign me. If he plays in Orlando, I'll play in the division. I'll fight him. Like, kind of like a little promo for them to fight.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. Permission to do like a 20-second wrestling brain during the A-list?
Yeah, you go.
You want to talk about celebrity boxing, JD? Logan Paul is wrestling at WrestleMania. There you go. That's it. I guess it wasn't 20 seconds.
Oh, I thought it was off of this.
Well, you said celebrity boxing, and I just like remembered it, and there's nowhere else for me to fit in that.
Was it.
Your favorite family is now part of WrestleMania. He's wrestling against Rey Mysterio.
The royal family.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. That's come on, Rey. Let's go, Rey. Still doing it. By the way, if someone who listens to the show and is good, prolific at Photoshop or graphic design, could Photoshop Ailish's face with the number 23 movie cover, but the number 22 replaced with the 23s.
Please do that.
I would greatly appreciate it. I would really, really greatly appreciate it. All right, what's next?
Okay, so Tom Brady is reportedly going to produce and act in a movie with Jane Fonda and Sally Field.
Act?
Yes. It's a film called 80 for Brady, a football-themed road trip comedy.
Oh, he's himself.
Yes. 80 for Brady. A football-themed road trip comedy starring four legendary actresses. The script for 80 for Brady was written by a couple comedians, and he's going to be helping it, producing it. Kyle Marvin and Michael Covino.
Don't know.
Do you know them? Okay. They were also behind the coming-of-age hit Booksmart. Which was a good
I like
movie.
How you wrote it, read it exactly like they wanted you to. The coming of age story. Of
I work for this
That's
media
real.
Company.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like the coming of age story.
He will have
Booksmart,
some sort of you know, smaller
cameo.
Role, but he's still going to be in it, and he's producing it with his company 199 Productions, which I've never heard of.
Okay,
so that's something to look forward to.
You bring this up. Do you want to see that movie? Like, who in their right mind wants to see that movie?
It sounds awful, but I'm kind of intrigued by how bad it could be. You know what I mean?
But, okay, Tom Brady's playing himself, and so maybe he can pull off a scene or two, right? But it's just mostly going to be cringe. I just don't, like, what is the upshot here? Who is this for? 80 for Brady? Is this for older women who love Tom Brady? I don't...
So the,
that's
the
it?
Plot line... is centered on four women who take a road trip to see Brady, their quarterback hero.
So this movie is for older women in Boston. That's how niche we're getting with movies now, is that it's worth seeing it and going for this. It's just, I don't understand who this is for. As you keep saying it, I go, who is this meant for? What is the demographic that you're trying to go after here? Because there's no chance that a sports fan, the average casual sports fan, or the target demo of who you're going after wants to see this movie, right?
No.
Like, men age, what's the target demo for sports content? It's usually men 25 to 50-something, Blake. I don't know. Do you know
that? 18 to 49 is the demo.
You think that someone 18 to 49 is going to come up to you guys and go, do you guys want to go see 80 for Brady at the movie theater this evening?
I think that, if he's going to venture into this world, it could have been a better genre or theme.
Is this a theater movie or is this a Netflix, straight to Netflix release movie?
No, it seems like it's going to be a Hollywood movie.
Huh.
Because the four women,
I've never heard of
Lily
a movie
Tomlin,
I want to watch less.
Jane Fonda, Rita Moreno, and Sally Field are apparently, you know, they're like the big driving force for people to come see this because they're legendary actresses.
Okay, I'll just watch them in their good movies that they actually cared about artistically than this. But okay, can you guys this is a really tough one, but I want you to think about it. So this movie now, for me, has become the I least want to see this movie I've ever heard of it being pitched to me. Can you remember a movie that you guys heard of or saw a trailer for and went, I have zero understanding of why any human being on the planet would watch this? Or I can guarantee you one thing in my life is that I will never sit down for the 2.5 hours to watch this movie.
Can I tell you one that was kind of similar, but I got like totally catfished by it? So the whatever you call it, the, what are those things called that they put it out?
Preview?
The trailer. Yeah for Snowman. Do you remember that movie?
What? No.
Okay. It came out and it was the Snowman and it looked like the coolest movie ever. Like it looked so sick. Honestly, like I remember being like, this is going to be the best movie I've ever seen. It was absolutely horrendous. I just looked it up now. It has 6% on Rotten Tomatoes. But during the break, go watch the
trailer.
You
thought this was going to be awesome?
It looked like it was going to be so cool. Like it was like a snowman killer and it was like in Norway and it looked like it was going to be sick and it was the worst movie I'd ever seen. So I don't know if you can trust my movies.
I was sold on that
trailer. I thought it was going to be amazing and it was god awful. So I don't think you can take my input here seriously.
Blake, do you have one?
Not really. I have a pretty good filter for like if something is not interesting to me, I just don't even notice it.
Oh.
So, yeah, sorry. I don't have a good answer for
that. That felt personal, you know.
Well, hey, I was paying it.
Like
I was listening.
You guys. Yeah.
I was listening enough to answer the question. So, Can't be that.
Val Kilmer.
Do you have one, JD?
I love. Well, I just Michael Fassbender and Val Kilmer are both in this horrible movie. 6%, like that's awful.
It's so bad, but you gotta watch the trailer.
Here's the thing: I can tell from the font of the poster that this movie
sucks.
It's bad. Like it's a bad movie. That is, don't watch this movie font if you have half a brain. This is do not put this movie on at any cost font. I think that's amazing.